Record will indicate that all the jurors except Mr. Madelang are present. It's now 9:30. We've tried to call Mr. Madelang's house, spoke to his mother. She knows that he left, and so I don't understand why he's not here. But, counsel, will you agree we have to move on at this point? We need to excuse him. If he comes in, ask him to remain. We'll talk to him at the recess. I think we'll have to excuse him at this time and select the name of one of the alternates.
Alternate number one.
Who is that?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith, he gets to move over one seat, what he's been waiting for. Who will be the next witness?
Mark Chi.
Okay, Mark Chi, called as a witness by the plaintiff, having been first duly sworn, was examined and testifies as follows.
Would you please state your full name, spell your last name for the record?
Mark Stephen Chi. Last name is capital C-H-E-E.
Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Chi.
Good morning, Mr. Pantone.
By whom are you presently employed?
I'm employed by Illumina.
What is your present position with Illumina?
Research fellow.
Some background information on you, Dr. Chi. First of all, how old, Dr. Chi, sir?
I'm 40 years old.
What is your marital status?
I'm single.
Have you ever been married, sir?
No, I haven't.
Let's take a look, please, at Exhibit 362. Dr. Chi, do you recognize Exhibit 362 as a copy of your resume?
Yes, I do.
Does the resume accurately set forth your employment experience?
It's a little bit out of date now, but what's on there is accurate from what I can tell.
So you were employed at Affymetrix from what period of time?
I was employed at Affymetrix from about 93 through about 97.
Through July of 97?
That's correct.
When did your employment with Illumina begin?
That began in June of 98.
What was your first position with Illumina?
Vice President of Genomics.
So you were an officer of the company at that point?
I guess at that stage. I'm not sure if we had officers at that point.
At some point, did you become an officer?
Yes.
When was that?
I don't recall the exact date.
Can you give us your best approximation?
Well, actually, I'm not too sure. I was on the research side. I didn't pay too much attention to those, you know, formal business details.
Can you give us your best estimate of how long into your employment it was that you became an officer?
I'm not sure, actually. It may have been earlier. It may have been a bit later. I'm not sure of the formal sort of designation when I became an officer.
Was it still sometime in 1998?
It may have been. I'm not sure.
How long did you hold the position of Vice President of Genomics?
For about 4 years.
And then did you... was your next position Research Fellow?
That's correct.
When did you go from Vice President to Research Fellow?
Actually, very recently. Just on Friday, last week.
I would say that's recently. Prior to coming to Illumina, had you ever been a Vice President before?
No, I hadn't.
Dr. Chi, do you recall an incident that took place on April 6th of 1999? An incident where Tony Zarnik essentially broke down in John Stuopnagel's office?
I have some recollection of that incident.
You were present at that incident, correct?
Yes, I was.
Do you recall that Dr. Zarnik was in a very emotional state during that meeting?
I do recall him being in an emotional state, yes.
Do you recall Dr. Zarnik crying at that meeting?
Yes, I do.
And Dr. Chi, you assumed, based on what you observed, that Dr. Chi... Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Chi, you observed Dr. Zarnik in John Stuopnagel's office on that day, April 6th, 1999, correct?
I actually don't recall which office it was in. I believe it was in Dr. Stuopnagel's offices, but it was in one of the offices at Illumina.
Based on what you observed, Dr. Chi, you assumed that Tony Zarnik had suffered a nervous breakdown. Is that correct?
From what I could gather, he was suffering some kind of severe emotional distress, some type of breakdown.
Do you recall characterizing it in your deposition as a nervous breakdown?
I recall characterizing it as a breakdown. I don't remember my exact words at the deposition.
How long did this meeting take place, this meeting on April 6th, 1999?
To the best of my recollection, it was a relatively brief meeting.
Now, I'm sure your counsel will cover your version of what happened specifically on that day, so I won't do that at this point. Let me ask you this. Based on what you observed on April 6th, 1999, did you then have a concern about Dr. Zarnik's health?
I did.
Isn't it correct that based on what you observed on April 6, 1999, you were also concerned about Dr. Zarnik's ability to continue to function as a chief scientific officer?
Not strictly, no.
Isn't it true that was one of your concerns, that you were concerned about Dr. Zarnik's ability to continue to function as chief science officer?
Dr. Zarnik, to the best of my recollection, raised that concern himself during the meeting, and so I had never seen him in this state before. I had some concern about his sort of ability to recover from this state. So I guess it would be fair to say I was very concerned about his health. I had some questions based on his statements or what I recollect of his statement as to his ability to continue, and I regarded it as an open question at the time to be resolved on discussion when he returned.
Counsel, can I see you for a minute? Mr. Manilang, we had to start without you. I've talked to the attorneys. What we're going to do is put you back on as an alternate juror, and we're going to have the reporter at some point read back the testimony that you missed.
Okay.
So essentially, just switch seats with Mr. Smith, and you'll become an alternate juror, and we'll read back the testimony. The attorneys have agreed to this at some convenient time. This is Dr. Chi, who's testifying, and most of what he's testified to is kind of preliminary. We're just now beginning. The testimony is now just beginning to cover the incident where Dr. Zarnik broke down.
Proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
Dr. Chi, would you agree that based on what you saw on April 6, 1999, that one of your concerns was Dr. Zarnik's ability to continue to function as chief science officer?
In a general sense, I guess you could say yes.
And you were concerned, weren't you, that the task that to you had apparently led to the breakdown, the task being writing a grant application, you were concerned that this appeared to you to be a relatively minor task that should not have resulted in a breakdown. Is that true?
The type of task is tedious. It's a nuisance, but not something I would expect at that level to lead to a breakdown.
And based on what you saw on April 6, 1999, you were concerned, Dr. Chi, about the fate of the company. Isn't that true?
Sorry, say again? I've always been concerned about the fate of the company, I should say.
Sure. You have a general concern about the fate of the company. Isn't it true that you had a specific concern based on what you saw on April 6, 1999? Your concerns relative to Dr. Zarnik. You were concerned about the fate of the company in light of what you had just observed.
I think probably the best way to, for me to answer that is to say that I had a concern that the senior management team was maybe not fully able to function. So I guess in that way you could say, yes, I had a concern about the fate of the company.
Let me refer to some of your deposition testimony on this point, beginning on page 70, line 2. Your testimony was as follows. So then, what business concerns did you have as a result of what you observed from Dr. Zarnik?
Well, at the time, Illumina was an even smaller company than it is now, and any company at that stage of development is critically dependent on the performance of its people, and it requires an enormous amount of attention and hard work and competency at every level of the job in order to make a small company be successful. It's rather common for small companies to fail and for people to lose their jobs as a result, investors to lose their money. So my concern was for the fate of the company. It's as if you have a ship and somebody at the helm steering the ship who has no idea where the shores are, who has no idea where the currents are running, has no idea of which direction they're going. You fear for the safety of the ship.
You agree you were fearful for the safety of Mothership Illumina, based on what you observed on April 6, 1999.
Yes. I think I was speaking to a broader concern there, though, with that analogy about the ship and that I had a longer-term concern going further back as to the ability of Dr. Zarnik to guide the company strategically.
I was asking you at deposition specifically about your observations on April 6, 1999. True?
That's correct. In context, you'll see that I also answered more broadly at the deposition.
Now, 2 days later, April 8, 1999, Dr. Zarnik returned to work, correct?
I believe that's correct. To the best of my recollection, I actually wasn't there when he returned.
At some point a few days after the incident where you thought Dr. Zarnik had suffered some sort of a breakdown, a few days later, he came back to work, correct?
That's correct.
And at that point, you learned that Dr. Zarnik suffers from depression.
I believe so, yes, that's correct.
And a few days after that, April 11th, 1999, do you recall being on a business trip with John Stuepnagel visiting Bristol-Myers Squibb?
Actually, I checked my calendar more recently after the deposition, and I did see on my calendar that I was visiting Bristol-Myers Squibb the week afterwards.
So do you recall meeting with Dr. Stuepnagel to talk about Tony Zarnik on about April 11th of 1999?
I recall discussing this matter with Dr. Stuepnagel sometime after the event, and I couldn't say 100% that it was at the Bristol-Myers Squibb meeting, but I think it's very likely, because I looked at my calendar and that would have been the meeting that was most likely to be the one where we talked.
At this meeting, you and Dr. Stuepnagel discussed replacing Tony Zarnik as chief science officer. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. As part of a more general discussion, we discussed whether or not we should contemplate such an action.
And at this point in time, Dr. Chi, you were concerned that there might be business problems for Illumina if Dr. Zarnik broke down again in the fashion he had previously broken down. Isn't that correct?
Actually, I wasn't too concerned about that.
Let me read from your deposition testimony, beginning at page 81, line 20. Reads as follows. Did you and Dr. Stuepnagel discuss what business problems would be presented to Illumina if Dr. Zarnik broke down again in the fashion that he did previously?
We may well have. I don't recall specifically, but certainly it was something that was of concern.
So your recollection was that it was of concern that Dr. Zarnik might break down again?
That's consistent with what I just said. I said I wasn't too concerned. There were other concerns that were greater that I also discussed at the deposition.
So you were concerned, but not too concerned?
I was very concerned overall.
I'm talking about this particular subject. The subject, let me get it clear, the subject of what business problems would be presented to Illumina if Dr. Zarnik broke down again.
I was not too concerned. That was one of my concerns, but it was relatively minor on the list of my concerns.
You and Dr. Stuepnagel discussed whether Tony Zarnik would be able to continue to function as CSO in light of what happened on April 6th. Is that true?
We discussed, actually, to the best of my recollection, and it's going back a long way, so it's rather vague, but we discussed the general question of Dr. Zarnik's performance, not just that particular incident, but going back over his performance record and whether or not we should consider at that time replacing him.
You were concerned whether Dr. Zarnik was healthy enough to continue as CSO. Isn't that true?
I was concerned about his personal health. I was very concerned about his personal health. I didn't believe anybody should continue in a position that was causing them that much stress in routine sort of job tasks. I was concerned about his ability to guide the company strategically, and that wasn't stemming from that particular incident. That goes back, his track record over a couple of years, really. And I was concerned about other factors, such as the morale of the company, the ability of Dr. Zarnik to foster a team spirit between the different sort of functional groups in the company. There are a number of different concerns I had, and these were all raised.
My question was, you were concerned, strike that. One of your concerns, sir, was whether Zarnik was healthy enough to continue on as CSO. Is that true?
Yes, in the context of what I've just answered, that's correct.
You and Dr. Stuepnagel discussed if this should be a situation that you should carefully monitor?
That's correct.
You wanted some time, didn't you, to see whether this breakdown, this one incident, was an isolated incident or was a pattern or would turn into a pattern. Is that true?
I don't recall discussing that specifically.
You did discuss options what to do with Dr. Zarnik, correct?
We did.
Let me read from your deposition testimony, beginning on page 87, line 8. Why was the option of Dr. Zarnik leaving the company rejected?
Again, you know, this is sort of trying to go through reasoning after the fact, long after the fact, when you can't remember the details. It makes it hard to answer the question. But, you know, I think we wanted to give Dr. Zarnik every opportunity to be successful, to do, you know, what he was capable, to determine for himself what his capabilities were. And it was one incident. I think we wanted to allow time to see, you know, if this would turn into a pattern or if it was really just some isolated incident.
Was that your state of mind at the time? It sounds like it was.
It sounds like it was.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 227. Do you recognize Exhibit 227 as a set of goals that were assigned to Dr. Zarnik when he was research fellow?
It does look like that.
And you participated in discussions with respect to setting these goals, is that right?
Yes, I did.
You were at a meeting with Mr. Flatley, Dr. Stupnagel, Dr. Barker, and yourself. You talked about setting goals for Tony Zarnik?
That's correct.
Now, on the second line, the second project, binary oligo encoding, let me first ask you what method is being used for decoding as of this point in time, May 19th of 2000?
It was a DNA-based decoding scheme.
Is that a decoding scheme that you invented?
Yes.
And that, your decoding scheme, was the decoding scheme used at Illumina up through and including the date these goals were assigned, May of 2000?
We tried many different things and exploring ways to decode arrays, but the specific invention that I came up with was used right from the beginning and indeed is used in manufacturing today.
This binary oligo encoding, there had been no prior work or experiments in that area before May of 2000, correct?
Actually, I don't think that's strictly correct in that you could say that the binary oligo decoding described here is an extension of the invention that I came up with. And so you could say, actually, there was a lot of prior work leading up to this.
Not specifically on binary oligo encoding.
It depends on what you call binary oligo decoding. We're getting into technicalities here, but the basic methodology is essentially the same.
But this is a different methodology. You'd agree with that.
Some details of methodology, some people might call them minor, some people might call them more significant, were different. But actually, the overall methodology, I'd have to say it was the same. Let me clarify. The key processing steps were the same.
Would you agree there were no experiments conducted specifically in the area of binary oligo encoding prior to May of 2000?
I wouldn't agree with that. I would say that perhaps no one had tried to do exactly this version of decoding. But a lot of the experiments that were done previously were directly relevant to doing this version of decoding.
No one is working on binary oligo encoding today, isn't that correct?
Again, I think it depends how you characterize it, because we're talking here about variant of schemes. Depending on how you characterize it, you could say that either no one was working on it or people were doing work that was closely affiliated with it.
Let's take a look at your sworn deposition testimony on this subject, beginning on page 124, where I was asking you about this project. So the binary oligo encoding project that Dr. Zarnik was assigned when he was a research fellow, was anyone assigned that project after Dr. Zarnik left the company?
I have no specific recollection on that point.
To your knowledge, is anyone working on that project today? I better be careful in terms of the use of today. I don't necessarily mean November 30th of 2001. I mean at this general point in time. Is anyone working on that project?
To my knowledge, nobody is working on that project today.
To the best of my knowledge, at this general point in time, nobody is working on this project. Is that accurate testimony?
Yes, but I think it's important to put it in context in that we
have... Counsel can put it in context, sir. Is that accurate testimony?
Well, if you've read it, I guess it is, yes.
Okay. And Dr. Chi, to your knowledge, does Illumina have any plans to conduct research in this area of binary oligo encoding?
We may well do in the future, but right now it's not being pursued.
Not being pursued today?
To the best of my knowledge, it's not being pursued today.
This was an invention of Dr. Zarnik's binary oligo encoding, correct?
Actually, it's a little bit unclear whether it was. This narrow concept to which I testified wasn't being worked on. The very narrow definition of what we were calling binary encoding, that was an invention of Dr. Zarnik's.
So this project on Dr. Zarnik's goals, Exhibit 227, binary oligo encoding, was that Dr. Zarnik's invention?
It's genuinely hard to answer that, because ideas of this type often have input from various people. I would say a very key part of that was Dr. Zarnik's invention, but other aspects were contributed by others.
You don't think too much of this area of decoding, do you, Dr. Zarnik's invention?
That's completely untrue. I think very highly of it.
Let me refer again to your deposition testimony. Page 301, line 19. In your opinion, did Dr. Zarnik make any significant contributions to the overall success of the company?
He occupied the position of chief science officer, and it looks funny if you don't have a chief science officer for a small company. I guess you could say, if nothing else, he filled a figurehead role.
Anything else in the way of significant contributions that Dr. Zarnik made to the overall success of the company?
Not that I'm recalling. Now, also to be fair, I should say, you know, there was work in the chemistry department that I wasn't always involved in, so it's possible he made minor contributions in the context of the group that I either was not aware of or I'm not recalling at this time.
I'm not talking about the minor contributions. I was asking you about significant contributions.
I do not recall any significant contributions that he's made, and even the contribution of so-called binary oligodecoding is highly debatable in terms of its significance when considered in light of the success of the company. I think it was a nice idea. The truth is, we don't use it today.
You stand by that testimony?
So...
You stand by that testimony, sir?
Yes, I do.
The idea to add the writing of a grant application to the third line of the goals. Do you recall whose idea that was?
No, I don't.
Was that your idea?
I just answered, I don't recall.
You might be able to recall if it was your own idea, as opposed to someone else's.
No, I don't recall whose idea it was.
It might have been yours?
It's possible.
Let me ask you a few questions about decoding experiments. You are familiar with the 768 decoding experiment?
Yes, I am.
Is it correct that the decoding experiments, there were a series of decoding experiments, each with increasing levels of complexity?
That's correct.
And the first decoding experiment was known as the 16-bead experiment. Is that right?
We didn't actually have formal names for these things, but yes, that was referred to as 16.
Experiment using 16 different bead types.
Right.
Over what period was that 16-bead experiment conducted?
Well, these experiments were never conducted just once. They were repeated multiple times. Different versions of them were tried. People were trying to optimize things, so there wasn't one 16-bead experiment.
Over what period were the series of 16-bead experiments conducted?
To the best of my recollection, probably would have been on the order of initial results, maybe a few weeks, and then maybe continuing for a few months.
Give me the inclusive time period, if you can recall it approximately, over which the 16-bead experiments were conducted. So from when to when, approximately?
They were one of the first things we worked on when we had lab facilities. So I'd say late 98, probably through to early 99, approximately.
You started...
Sorry for interrupting. I should say occasionally one goes back and does experiments again to try something new or to re-verify something in the future. It's possible that there were additional experiments conducted even much later than that.
By late 98, you mean shortly after you went into your new laboratory space?
That's correct.
So that would be September of 1998, approximately?
Very approximately.
You say they continued through approximately early 1999. Can you give me an approximate month?
Actually, no, I can't.
Was it first quarter 99, second quarter 99?
I'm sort of guessing at this point because, you know, we did a lot of experiments and you are asking me to pin down a particular series. I'm guessing first quarter 99.
Is that your best recollection at this point in time?
It's more an educated guess than a specific recollection.
You wouldn't quarrel with the notion that the experiments were conducted from approximately September of 98 through first quarter of 99 on 16-bead?
No, I wouldn't quarrel with that.
Now, the next series of experiments involved 128 different bead types. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you give me the approximate time frame in which those experiments or series of experiments were done on 128 different bead types?
To the best of my recollection, would have been, the bulk of them would have been done, I think, in 1999.
Beginning when the 16-bead ended and continuing through the remainder of 99, approximately.
There was probably some overlap.
So most of 1999 was devoted to, in terms of decoding, some experiments on 128 different bead types.
A lot of the experiments, decoding experiments in 1999, were around 128 bead types, but by no means was that sort of an exclusive set of decoding experiments going on.
I'm just trying to set the time frame in which 128 bead experiments were conducted. And a 768 decoding experiment, when did the first 768 decode experiment take place?
Again, for the same reasons, I don't recall exactly, but I believe we began working on those experiments in late 99.
And those experiments continued at least through July of 2000, when the Roadshow experiment was conducted?
They continued through probably all the way through 2000.
Before and after the Roadshow.
That's right.
And Kevin Gunderson was the principal scientist who conducted the 768 decoding experiment, true?
You could say that. It was very much a team effort. A number of people were very important to conducting that experiment.
Not only can I say that, actually several witnesses have already said that.
Yeah.
I'm asking if you say that. You agree Kevin Gunderson was the principal scientist on the...
Kevin was directly responsible for the 768 experiment.
Was he also lead scientist on the 16-bead experiment?
He did that almost single-handedly.
And the 128-bead?
He was the key person in that series of experiments, too.
The 768 decode experiment that was conducted in the summer of 2000, that involved three different colors of dyes, is that right?
Sorry, could you say again?
The 768 decode experiment that was conducted in the summer of 2000, that involved three different colors of dyes, correct?
That's more or less correct. I believe the intention initially was to use four. We decided for a couple of reasons to do it. Practicality. To use three.
So at one point it was four, later three, true?
I believe so.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 257, please. Dr. Chi, do you recognize this as an email that you sent on June 30th of 2000 to Jay Flatley, Barker, and Stulpnagel?
Yes.
Subject was decoding update.
Yes.
You say, Kevin's group will do a two-color decoding with the 768 Illumina codes next week. Was that a typo, or were you actually doing two-color decoding?
Very unlikely to be a typo. We often did preliminary experiments. One of the beautiful things about decoding is it's very...
You need...
Am I allowed to answer this?
Is it responsive to the question?
I believe it is.
Were you doing two-color decoding in the summer of 2000?
Just answer the question.
So we have the aim of three-color experiments, and we did some preliminary experiments. And I think we did a two-color experiment as a preliminary one, yes.
Are you sure you did two-color experiments?
I'm not 100% sure, but we did one-color experiments, we did two-color experiments, we did three-color experiments, we did four-color experiments. We did experiments with mixtures of the colors. We did a lot of different experiments, and I don't recall exactly what was done at any particular time in this series.
I think I asked a simple question. Are you sure you did two-color decoding in summer of 2000?
I couldn't be 100% sure, but if I wrote it there, it's most likely that we did.
That was going to be done by Kevin Gunderson.
That's right. I should say I didn't directly do these experiments. I oversaw the science to do with this. So the experiments were conducted in the lab by research in the lab directly supervised by Kevin.
Now, Dr. Chi, you sent results from the 768 decoding experiment to the Roadshow during the Roadshow, is that right?
To the best of my recollection, that's correct.
And you sent it by means of email?
That's right.
Attaching a PowerPoint slide?
I believe so.
Would you look at Exhibit 269, please? Do you recognize Exhibit 269 as a copy of an email that you sent to the Roadshow team on July 13th of 2000?
Looks like an email from me.
And you were attaching two PowerPoint slides, is that correct?
You know, I don't recall exactly how many PowerPoint slides, but probably two.
Let me show you one that we have a blow-up of. It's part of the same exhibit, with Illumina bait stamp number ILL1560. Was that one of the PowerPoint slides you sent to the Roadshow team?
Yes, it was.
During the pendency of the Roadshow, while the Roadshow was still going on?
I believe so, yes.
Now, the whole point of this slide, Dr. Chi, is to show that as a result of the 768 decoding experiment, you were getting different colors to show up upon the beads, correct?
Scientifically speaking, the point of the experiment was to show that it was feasible to decode at a complexity of hundreds of things.
Let me interrupt a second. I was asking about the point of the slide. The point of the slide is to depict the different colors that show up during decoding.
Yes, it's to illustrate some of the data that we obtained from the decoding experiment.
And the point of the slide is to show that you could tell the different bead types apart. You could distinguish them from one another due to the color that shows up during the decoding process.
That's correct.
It's fundamental to the experiment that the colors be distinguishable enough that you can tell them apart. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, Dr. Chi, you sent this slide containing some results from the 768 decode experiment. You sent this slide to the roadshow team for possible use during the roadshow.
That is correct.
You thought this slide might be of use to Mr. Flatley and the roadshow team in connection with answering questions about decoding?
I did.
At some point, Dr. Chi, you became aware of mislabeled dye that was used in this experiment?
That's right.
If we could put up Exhibit 275, do you recognize this exhibit as a copy of a letter sent to Illumina by Molecular Probes?
Yes.
Molecular Probes was the vendor who had sold you the dyes in question.
That's right.
And Dr. Chi, you found out about the mislabeling problem a few days before you saw this letter. Is that right?
I'm not sure that I did. My recollection on that is a little bit vague as to exactly when we found out. We suspected there might be an issue, I think, a little bit before.
In fact, you knew there was something wrong with the experiment before you learned about the mislabeling issue, right?
No, I didn't, I think in the sense that you're asking. I had already looked at the analysis of the experiment, and there are a number of things that I wasn't happy with that didn't go quite as expected. But as to the result was as expected.
You knew there was something wrong with the experiment before you heard about the mislabeling issue.
One of the things we were concerned about in the analysis was that there wasn't as much separation as we would have liked. So I guess in that sense you could say yes.
Isn't it true that you and Kevin Gunderson knew there was something wrong with the experiment? And when you found out about the mislabeling issue, you both thought, well, this is why?
I think that's fair to say. We suspected something didn't work optimally, and when we saw this, we thought, yes, that's the reason why.
And on the point of when you learned about the mislabel problem, I want to read from your deposition testimony, please. Exhibit 185, line 2. You believe this mislabeling problem came to your attention when you saw the letter from the vendor, right?
That's O-O. I think that, you know, it may have been a couple of days previously. We were scratching our heads thinking that there was something that was not quite right. We didn't know what it was, and that letter, to the best of my recollection, established the cause.
Does this refresh your recollection, that you found out about this a few days before the letter?
That's consistent with what I'm remembering now, yes.
And then you and Kevin Gunderson talked about the mislabeling problem, is that right?
Yeah, I don't recall specifically what we said, but yes, we discussed it.
Dr. Chi, you were in charge of the company while Jay Flatley was on the roadshow.
That's right.
And isn't it true that Tony Zarnik approached you about the mislabeled dye?
You know, I don't recall him doing so.
No recollection?
No.
Either way?
That's right. I recall it was discussed. Actually, it was discussed fairly broadly in the group that was working on this, but I don't recall Tony specifically coming up to me about this mislabeling issue.
So you have no recollection either way on that point. Is that your testimony?
At this point, I'm not recalling anything either way. That's right.
Was responsibility for decoding transferred from you to someone else after Dr. Zarnik was fired?
After it? Let's see. At some point, I don't remember exactly when, responsibility was handed off. We established feasibility, I thought very nicely, and we wanted to transition it to more of a manufacturing process, and that's a whole different set of skills and set of things to be done.
So who took over for decoding?
At some point, Steve Bernard took over with the specific purpose of transitioning it into manufacturing.
You just don't recall whether that was before or after Dr. Zarnik was fired.
At this time, I don't recall exactly when that happened.
Dr. Chi, Was Illumina your first experience working for a company that went public while you were employed there?
No, it wasn't.
What was your first experience in that, when that happened?
I was employed at Affymetrix when we went public.
What was your position when you went public at Affymetrix?
I think it was probably senior scientist, but I'm actually not 100% sure.
Did you work on the Affymetrix roadshow in any way?
No, I didn't.
Did you work on the Affymetrix S1 registration statement?
No, I did not.
So your experience at Illumina was the first experience you had helping to review and edit an S1 registration statement?
I would say yes. I saw drafts of the Affymetrix documents, but I really wasn't participating in creating them.
So Illumina is the first time you participated in creating an S1?
That's right.
You were involved in regular meetings where the S1 would be reviewed and edited?
I was involved in a number of those meetings. I wasn't involved in all of them.
Was Dr. Zarnik ever involved in any of those meetings that you attended?
Best of my recollection, no.
You were not on the roadshow making presentations, were you?
I wasn't on the roadshow making presentations.
But you were flown from San Diego to New York to witness a roadshow presentation.
I chose to fly to New York to witness at the last day of the roadshow.
And were you present then on the day the company went public? Were you present in New York City?
Yes, I was.
On the floor, the trading floor of Goldman Sachs?
Yes, I was.
Were all the founders there?
Let's see. Depends what you mean by founder. But Jay Flatley, John Stulpnagel, myself, and I think David Barker were there.
If we can take a look at Exhibit 332. On this exhibit, Dr. Chi, I wanted to confirm that you received this email from Tony Zarnik on September 5th of 2000, and you responded back with an email to Tony Zarnik on September 5th, 2000.
Yes.
When you said last Friday, you went from being a vice president to being a research fellow, correct?
That's right.
Do you consider that to be a demotion of any sort?
No, I didn't. Actually, I initiated that, and I'm very happy to be a research fellow.
Do you have written goals as a research fellow?
Not yet, because I've just made that transition on Friday, but I do expect to in the near future.
Who are you reporting to as a research fellow?
I report to David Barker.
Do you have any subordinate reporting to you as a research fellow?
None whatsoever.
How many shares of stock do you own, Dr. Chi?
In the approximate range of 900,000.
And that was the same amount you owned at the time of the IPO, is that correct?
Very approximately.
So has your stock or rate of stock vesting ever been reduced since the time you joined Illumina?
Yes, it has.
When was that?
When I became a research fellow.
What was the extent of the reduction of your stock?
Well, the unvested stock, some of it, actually it vests at a slower rate, and some options I don't get anymore.
But in terms of the initial 900,000 that you had at the time of the IPO, you still have those?
Let's see. At the time of the IPO, yes, that's right. But some of them vest at a greatly reduced rate.
So the vesting schedule changed, but in terms of the number of shares, that didn't change. Is that correct?
Well, that's actually... Some of my stock vesting is tied to goals, and so it depends on whether or not goals are accomplished. But in terms of general arrangement, the vesting slowed down, and some options I don't get anymore.
The vesting slowed down, but you still have the same number of shares.
Very approximately, yes.
What is your current salary, sir?
Let's see. My current salary is, I think it's gone down to about 160-something thousand.
Do you work now part-time as a research fellow?
I work 50% time as a research fellow.
Your salary is $160,000 a year.
I think a little bit above that. Now,
what was your salary when you were,
I should say,
vice president?
But let me clarify. It actually, for the first 3 months, it's at that level. It decreases pretty rapidly to half of my salary.
To reflect the fact you are going to be working half-time?
That's right. The step down is to reflect that initially I'm expected to be more than half-time to help the transition.
What was your salary when you were vice president?
About $190,000.
Do you have any plans to leave Illumina, Dr. Chi?
No, I don't.
Nothing further.
Okay, would this be a good time for our recess? We'll take our morning recess at this time. We'll be in recess until 10:45. Mr. Madelang, I'd like you to remain for a couple of minutes. We'll resume at 10:45. Please don't form or express any opinions about the case. Don't discuss the case. What was the problem this morning? Did you have a cell phone?
No, I didn't.
It's important. Actually, we're really on a strict schedule right now, although I don't think it really caused any other than a little delay this morning, but I don't think it's going to throw us off for the whole day. Could you get here at 8:30 tomorrow morning? Have the reporter read back the 10 minutes or so of testimony that you missed?
Sure.
8:30 tomorrow morning. He said probably 10 or 15 minutes.
Sure.
Thank you very much. Anything I need to discuss with you?
I'm sorry?
So, we're right on schedule. That was about 5 minutes less, so you have 5 minutes for your redirect.
I have 10 on my clock. My clock seems to be running slower.